Well, your first stop is beepmovie.com.
Right then, guys, you're here with another episode of Dork Tunes. You'll see that it's not Noob that's introducing everyone, it's me, Andy. And I'm on my own, and I'm scared, and he's left me to go watch some sort of concert or something, or he's knitting a jumper, or I don't know, something like that. Anyway, we have a very, very, very special guest for you on the show today. So in Noob's absence, I would like to introduce Karen Collings, the founder of the Beep documentary, which I'm sure you've all heard about. We've been retweeting it for God knows how long. I've been doing some stuff on my personal page about it, so has Pete, and we've been doing it all over the Dork Tunes page. So, Karen, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Andy.
Yeah, it's brilliant. You know, let's go ahead. Do you want to introduce yourself, say a bit about yourself and how you kind of got surrounded by game music and game audio, and just tell us where you came from.
Oh, it's a long story, but so my day job is I'm a professor and I teach game design and sound design. But originally I started out in music, and when I was writing my PhD, I realized that nobody had written about game music. And this is about halfway into my PhD, and I thought, oh, I should do that instead, because I always loved games, played games since I was a little child. But it just never occurred to me that this is something that people could actually write about. So I waited until I finished my PhD, and then the next day I started looking into game music. And this is back in 2002, so it's good 14 years ago now.
Right.
And since then, I've just been working in various aspects of game music. You know, everything from doing a little bit of game stuff myself to making software for game music to studying, researching, teaching. And now the latest project is working on a film about game music.
And that film?
That film is called Beep.
Thank you. Now, for anyone out there that's not aware of it, Beep is basically, from what I see, is a large collection of interviews with game composers. Am I right?
That's right. We've covered a full history of game sound, so including sound effects, music, and voiceover, going back to the very first arcade games, which were mechanical arcades, even before pinball came around, right through to today's greatest artists and composers.
So what, I mean, did Beep come about from your kind of days, you know, as a professor and teaching? I mean, what gave you the idea, do you know what, I'm going to turn this into a documentary, I want the world to see this?
Oh, I kind of wish I could go back now and say, don't do it, it's too much work. But, well, I'd done a bunch of kind of experimental films with friends for a few years. And so I was getting into film a bit more as far as production side of things. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, what's my next big academic project going to be? And I thought, well, I'll write another book. But I've written a bunch of books and it's kind of boring. And I wanted to do something a little bit different this time. So I said, well, maybe I'll go and interview these people and then I can make a book out of the interviews. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to interview them, I should record it. And then I was talking to one of my friends who works in film. I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to go and record all these interviews. And he said, no, you have to do a film. So he got me lined up with a camera guy. And from there, we did a Kickstarter. We raised enough money to do a round of interviews around the world. And that's kind of, you know, it just kind of snowballed from this idea of writing a book to suddenly it's a two-volume book and a movie and an interactive documentary. And yeah, it's great though.
The amount of work that I've seen that you've put into this, I can eventually see one day there may be a movie of the movie. So someone's going to play Karen Collins just flying around the world interviewing all these composers. So when you say you're interviewing composers and people in the game music industry, this isn't just Dave that lives down the road who does it from his bedroom. Do you want to give us a kind of a brief list of what sort of names we should be expecting to see in Beep?
Oh, wow. I should have called up my list on my computer. Okay.
In no favorite order.
I mean, so many important people. Nobu Uematsu, of course, Final Fantasy composer. Marty O'Donnell, Halo composer. All three of the Three Stooges at LucasArts. People going back right to the early days of the arcades that are less well known, but who worked on some of those early games that aren't as as well known as games today. I don't know. Yeah, you name a composer, and we probably got them.
Well, I remember seeing I've seen a few snippets here and there, and the we were kind of honoured to witness the first part of the kind of the Eastern Chronicle of the Beep documentary at Game Music Connect this year, and judging by just the small handful that we saw on screen there, I was like, wow, why did I not back this project? I've seen it tons and tons of times. And I'm like, why did I not? But you've travelled all... I mean, how many miles would you say you've travelled in all this?
Oh, wow. Okay, well, we went to the States. Let's see, we went to MAGFest in Washington. Then we went to California. We went to Seattle. Like, there was just three trips to the States. And then it was Vancouver. There was Tokyo. There was London and Liverpool. So that's a lot of miles coming from Toronto.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And what about what you, because you spent some time in Japan as well. That was a very sweaty time as well, judging by the what you were saying at Game Music Connect. Very small rooms and cramped spaces, eh?
It was, and it was so humid. And of course, when you're filming, you have to turn off the air conditioners because they make too much noise. If you care about sound anyway, you're turning the air conditioners off. But then what happens is the camera was just overheating all the time. The sensors would overheat. And so we would have to keep stopping. And our poor people we were interviewing were just dripping with sweat half the time. So we would have to stop and mop them up a little bit. And yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was sort of mid-30s Celsius, which I think is somewhere in the 90s Fahrenheit, and very, very humid. So if you're filming in Japan, I recommend going in the winter.
Yeah.
Not in May.
All right. Well, moving on a little bit, I watched a video not so long ago where you performed the interview with Winifred Phillips. Those of you who will have heard of music in the Little Big Planet series, a little bit in God of War as well. And I think it was about a 25 minute long video where she really went into depth about like her book, A Composer's Guide, and her kind of journey and this, that and the other. And I thought, well, okay, so you've probably done maybe a 20 to 30 minute long interview with all of these amazing composers and influential people. I mean, how do you do it? How do you ask the same questions like over and over and over again without falling asleep on yourself?
Well, I wasn't asking the same questions. And
was
of
you
course,
not? All right.
No, different questions for different people. And so, you know, what ends up a 25-minute interview is more like a little bit over an hour because, of course, you don't hear the questions that are being asked and you don't have all the sort of stops and starts and stuff that are... So it's about an hour sitting down with each person. I was just so excited to talk to some of these people in depth. Many people I'd met before at the game developers conferences and so on. Mm-hmm. But this was the first time to really sort of sit down with them for a good hour and just talk about their work. I mean, this is something I'm so passionate about that I could have asked the same questions and not been bored because I would still get different answers. Mm. So it was a great opportunity to get to talk to these people about some, you know, really exciting games, about what they do on a day-to-day basis. And we had a blast. I mean, we had a lot of fun just talking to these people.
Brilliant. When we, because we've been going to Game Music Connect for the last few years now, and I've spoke with John and James on a number of times when they've said, oh, how did you like it this year, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. And when I've said to him a few times, I'd like to see a little bit more of, like, Eastern content because Nobu is essentially my most favorite video game composer in the world. He's probably, his music for Final Fantasy VII was probably the thing that really got me into composing. I mean, you mentioned a lot about like cultural differences and how people thought different kind of on different wavelengths in the game audio industry. I mean, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I think for the most part, the Western and Eastern approaches to game music are quite similar. Mm-hmm. I think that the tools they're using now tend to be the same, whereas in the past, they tended to use more proprietary tools. Mm-hmm. Now they're using the same middleware. The processes are very similar. The budgets are very similar. Sometimes they're even coming over to record, you know, orchestras in the United States and so on. So there's a lot more overlap than there used to be as far as their process and attitudes towards game music. I think there's a few differences. The one that came out in the special that we ran at Game Music Connect was just this idea. A couple of composers brought up the fact that they thought orchestral music was being overused. And I think to some extent, you know, I sort of agree with that in the sense that it's an easy go-to, you know, it works every time and it's very kind of, you know, it sounds great, it's lush, it's beautiful, it's very easy to call on this long history of film music and to use that rather than to try something more experimental. But I think that there's also a lot of really great experimental music that's being done in games as well. For instance, we interviewed Jason Graves, and he's done a lot of stuff with like aleatoric music when it's getting really sort of chaotic and crazy sounding. And Gary Scheinman, same kind of thing. He's played around with some aleatoric aspects and played around with early 20th century music styles. So I think that there's a lot of sort of non-Hollywood-y music out there as well.
I agree. It's very easy to go, let's make it epic and, you know, big brass, big, and it's kind of a cultural shift that tends to rub off from the film industry in a way where, you know, the same sort of people, they want this gamer to be playing this type of game because they think they might like this film. And yeah, it's pigeonholed a little bit slightly, but you can understand why some of the kind of Eastern societies would think maybe stay away from orchestral music a little bit. I've noticed that a lot of their kind of music for games is featured as songs, so they would have vocalists and an actual band that would, you know, play live, and as opposed to, you know, an orchestra or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think they're a lot more influenced by anime than they are by Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So you have this sort of tradition of songs being played to animated sequences mm-hmm. already. So I think that, in fact, quite a few of the composers we spoke to talked about the relationship of games to anime and how they were fans of different types of anime and manga, and how all of that sort of played into the Japanese game culture.
All right, cool, excellent. How many composers do you think that you interviewed in total?
I believe it's 90 something in person. Maybe it was 89. It's close to 90 in-person interviews that we did.
Wow.
So yeah, that's crazy. I mean, each one you think about, okay, it was about an hour sitting down interviewing them, but it's about an hour to set up the cameras and prep all of that stuff, and then there's you know, the advance work that goes into preparing for an interview, you know, playing the games, listening to their music, reading past interviews they've done, trying to find those sort of hit points that they're really excited about and want to talk about. So that's a few hours. And then there's all of the work that gets done in post-production from that material, you know, turning it into the webisodes, transcribing it, writing it up for the books. I mean, so each interview I reckoned was about 20 hours of work. So yeah, times 90 people. It's been a lot of work.
Yeah, it seems to have become quite a huge kind of passion project for you, and you know, you still seem excited about it. I mean, I've heard you talk about it via social media and in interviews and this, that and the other, and each time you always seem like you're extremely passionate about it still, even though on the inside you may be dying and physically like, no, I can't do it anymore, like you said earlier. It seems as though you're extremely passionate about it, and usually that's where the best results come from.
I hope so. I mean, I definitely am still really passionate about it, and I think it will come across in the film how much, you know, this is a passion project for me. It's something I really love. In fact, way back in the early days, we had a Hollywood producer get in touch and want to produce the film, and it was tempting. It's like, well, yeah, it'd be great to have the opportunity of a lot more financing behind me and so on, but at the same time, I'm like, you know what? I kind of feel like this is something I have to do on my own terms. I have to make sure that it's the film that I want to make rather than what somebody else wants me to make. And so I turned down the offer, and sometimes I think, you know, it would have been useful to have a lot more help along the way, but really this is about me paying tribute to all of these people that have had such a big influence on my life and saying, you know, thank you for doing this wonderful music, this wonderful sound, wonderful voice. I mean, these games are something that I've spent my life playing, and I really do appreciate these people. So it really is a passion project for me, and I've been passionate about game music for so long. I think it would take a lot more than this to ruin that passion.
let's hope it continues. So you were just talking about you've loved game music for years and years and years. Any specific games that you prefer have a little bit of a twinkle in your eye? What's kind of your favourite sort of games to play and even listen to the music of?
Well, my go-to games tend to be DS games because I don't tend to get a whole lot of time to sit down in front of a console these days. But for the past couple of years, I mean, I really love the Mario and Luigi series on Nintendo DS. And we got to interview Yoko Shimomura, who did the music for a lot of that. And it was so exciting. I mean, it was just like, of all the people I get to interview, I can't believe this. You know, I play these games so much. And the Zelda games, of course, huge. All of the Zelda games I've played through, I don't know how many times. Great music in those as well. So I guess I would have to say Nintendo games, generally speaking. You know, going way back to when I was a kid, even the Super Mario, those old games, Metroid, one of my favorite soundtracks. And you know, right through to today, I'm still playing Zelda. I think the new Mario & Luigi RPG comes out this month. I'm just waiting. I pre-ordered it a while ago, and I'm just waiting for it to show up in my mailbox. And then I know I'm not going to get any more work done for like 3 weeks while I finish this game.
But this is the kind of the upside to you not putting it to a Hollywood studio. You get so like, no, it's going to go. I'm going to pause this for a bit, and I'm going to go play my game. No, you do right. You do right.
Yeah, I haven't had much time to pause anything, but the film is just at the point now where we're doing the last stages of the voice. Leonard is putting the last stages in the music. And so once that's done, then I'm sending it off to the audio support team who's doing all the mixing and everything. And then it's got color correction, and then it's pretty much finished. So it's almost at that point where it's out of my hands. It will be in the next few weeks anyway, so it won't be long till it's finally off my plate.
Wow. When should we expect to see it?
Well, the premiere is at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco in March 15th. And from there, we're hoping we'll find a UK premiere date for you somewhere. Oh. I'm not really sure where, but sometime over the summer. I'll also be screening it at a festival in the Netherlands in May in Amsterdam. And yeah, we'll start organizing some dates for screenings and then get it out to all of our Kickstarter backers and so on. I'm just talking to a distributor this coming week about all of the dates and everything. They need some advance notice as far as it's just tying up all of the legal things at this point, which can take a lot of months and can extend the release date. So I can't say for sure when it's going to be out in everybody's hands, but hopefully sometime in early spring.
Well, you can guarantee if you do get a premiere date for the UK, I will be there, definitely. Have you got any thoughts as to maybe releasing all of the interviews? I know because you can only fit like small slices here and there, and 90 composers and an hour at a time. That's a hell of a lot of time. I mean, have you ever thought of maybe making a sub edit and having everything just out there eventually?
Well, that's what we are doing with these webisodes that we're releasing every sort of, I don't know, whenever I have a chance to take a break from the main film. I've just been putting out these webisodes of the full interview content, minus my questions and awkwardness. I don't really want to hear myself in this stuff. I really just want to let them speak. So it's really about sort of chopping out the interviews into something that is coherent, which takes a little bit of time. But as far as, all of the content will eventually get there out online. And then we're also building an interactive documentary, which will have a kind of non-linear game-like way to move through all of this content. So if you're interested in a particular topic, you can follow a thread through in a non-linear way rather than sort of sitting down and going, okay, there's 90 hours of film here I have to sit through to find what I want. And Leonard's doing some great stuff for that. We're working on a kind of generative nonlinear score for this to actually play online. And then you can actually work through some of this stuff. If you're curious about how things work, there'll be more sort of interactive applications online that you can play around with. So that's the plan, is to keep using this content because there is such great content for people to watch. And then, of course, we've transcribed all of the interviews as well. So if you want to know what question they were asked, you can actually read it in the books. So the full interviews are all transcribed and they're laid out, and I'm just waiting for a chance to go meet with the printers in Toronto, and then we'll get those books out to our Kickstarter backers as well.
So I assume the Kickstarter backers will get the first choice, and then will there be a worldwide distribution?
As far as the books go, what I'm doing is only printing enough to cover the Kickstarter backers, just because I don't want to spend my life running an online store. I don't have that kind of time, and it's not something that I really enjoy. So once I get those hard copies out, then I'll have a digital like Amazon ebook people can purchase. But yeah, I don't plan to print thousands of these things and store them in my basement for the next 10 years. And same for the film, like the DVDs, I'm just printing enough to cover the Kickstarters, and everybody else can buy a digital copy, and we'll work with our distributors as far as, you know, video on demand options. Hopefully we can get it to Netflix and other sort of free screening opportunities.
Of all the Kickstarter backers' names, so I can find them and hunt them down and get a copy of the DVD myself. So Beep is not just a film that people can watch. It's an interactive experience. It's a book. It's a journey. Getting to listen to all of these composers' stories and people working in game audio, this, that, and the other. I assume that based on all the interviews you did, people and spoke about their journeys and how they got to becoming a composer. Now, a lot of people listening, as well as being game audio fans, you will find that there are some composers listening because they're very, very interested in trying to get into the industry. Did you get many words of advice from any of the composers on the road?
I did, and in fact, we're putting together a special about game music industry, sort of exactly looking at that type of question. I didn't ask a whole lot of people that question because I really wanted to talk about the music, and I know that they asked that in like every interview. So I didn't want to get too into that side of things, but we did ask a few people for advice, and we're gonna take that chunk and make a kind of little episode that people can, it'll be a DVD extra, but we'll also have it online, people can watch. But generally, I mean, the general feeling is just that it's all networking. I mean, your talent has to be there, but once you've got the talent and the skill, it really is about who you know, and it's about getting people to like you, you know? I see people going to the Game Developers Conference and acting like dicks, and you just think, you know what? Nobody is going to want to work with you because nobody wants to work with a jerk, because there's 3,000 people who are not jerks that they can hire, so why would you ever get hired? It doesn't matter how talented you are, that if you're a jerk, then you're not going to get a job. But if you're still sort of up and coming, and maybe your skills aren't as great as, you know, the big name composers, but you're a super nice person, chances are you can find work. I mean, it really is about that networking, about being a good person and getting to know people in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I've spoke to plenty of people that are at the top of their game, and they're in the field at the moment, and they've all said the same sort of thing. It's all well and good if you're an amazing composer, but if you can't even hold a conversation with someone, and you know you've not got the personality, then no one's going to want to work with you because it's a close knit environment where you've kind of got to be on the same level. But yeah, so going out, networking, that's great. Let's find out a little bit more about yourself. So outside game audio, I assume you don't listen to video game soundtracks all the time.
Not all the time, nope.
No. What else do you like to do? So let's talk a bit about yourself. What else does Karen Collins like to do when she's not when she's not beeping?
You know, my life has been so consumed by this that I have not had a life for a couple of years. But prior to, I've been a volunteer police officer. I am really into fitness. I was a personal trainer for a while, and I know you wouldn't know it to look at my beep body that's been destroyed by you're sitting in front of the computer all day, but still sort of, you know, really into sports and fitness. And what else do I do? Yeah, I mean, work is my hobby as well. Various different creative projects, I would say, from making sort of experimental films, working on software games. I run a software company. God, I see I'm forgetting all this stuff. Like, oh, I forgot I run a company as well. Yeah. so I run a music software company called VMix. And VMix allows game developers to tag locations in their game that a user can pick a song for. So if the user wants to play songs off their iPod, iPad, they can actually associate it with a particular point in the game. So let's say you want a particular song to play at the boss level. So you can pick a song for that particular spot in the game, and then we can do things like real-time processing of whatever song the users put in, so we will harmonize sound effects to the music that's playing. We can do real-time DSP processing, so you know, if your character goes underwater, your music will sound like it's gone underwater with a, you know, low pass filter and so on. So that's my software company. It's free on the Unity Asset Store if you want to check it out. The first iteration doesn't have these advanced DSP processing stuff in there, but we're going to get a new version out in the next couple of months, as soon as I finish with Beat, basically. It's ready to go. I just need the time to put into the marketing side of things for that. I'm kind of a workaholic, and work has kind of taken over my life.
Do you know, I used to absolutely love the ability to play my own music in another game. Like, on the old PlayStation 1, there were certain games where you could stop the game, like Grand Theft Auto, take the disc out, put your own CD in, and boom, you can listen to your own music while the game is already still technically running. However, every single time you died, the game would crash. And it was like, ah, come on. The same with Gran Turismo for the PS3 version. The problem was, is every time you started a new race, the same song would play over and over again. You couldn't decide when the stop-start would happen.
Right.
But yeah, I'd love to have a look at that. That sounds really good. Thank you. So I think we're nearing kind of towards the end of it. As we've been going through the interview, the listeners will have heard some music, which you may or may not hear in the Beep documentary. Am I right?
That's right. So we have a whole list of tracks. I mean, of course, it's very difficult to try and pick songs for something like this. And in a couple of cases, we are fighting the copyright owners for the right to use the music in the film. So we're still kind of figuring out exactly which songs will appear in the film, because it does depend to some extent on whether we can get permission. I mean, technically it's fair use, but we also don't want to get in a legal battle with, you know, Disney or some big company like that. Disney. I honestly don't know why these companies would have a problem with us using, you know, 30 seconds of a clip of a song in a game while the composer is discussing it. You know, how are we possibly interrupting your revenue streams, you know? But nevertheless, some companies are quite strict about how they let their content be used. So we're still fighting for some songs, trying to figure out what will get in there. But I've given you a list and you can pick from there. Yeah, it's so hard because there's so many great game songs. And initially I thought, okay, well, let's sort of start with a definitive list of these are songs that have to be in the film because these are the most iconic game songs. And it kind of changed from there after I'd started interviewing people, because I realized that there's actually things about particular songs that are important that these maybe games that people don't know, or they may be games that are just don't have the kind of iconicity of some of the big games. So we have some music in there that's maybe not as popular, and it people would be like, well, this wouldn't be in my top 10 list. Well, it wouldn't necessarily be in my top 10 list either, but there's something about this piece of music, or you know, piece of sound that was important at the time. So that's why it's there.
No, I completely agree. I've thought about game music, and obviously with hosting Dork Tunes with Pete, you got to think on a weekly basis. Okay, what would I like to play? What we're going to play on today's show? And we get a lot of requests, and similar to yourself, we get a lot of requests for kind of the Mario, Zelda type Nintendo franchises. But then there are the kind of the little gems that people forget about, like Alex the Kid for the old Master System. And I absolutely, and we had there was a game called Psycho Fox, which somebody had just thrown a review up on the internet the other day of this old game called Psycho Fox, which was a similar platformy Master System type game. Bring back a flood of memories of playing it, like in my grandma's house and her being there, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to try and get this soundtrack, I'm going to try and get these, you know, these tracks from somewhere and have a listen to them. So yeah, no, I agree. It's not just the Tetris theme tune and the Mario World theme tune and stuff. There's a plethora of music out there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's also important not to necessarily always just sort of go to those top 10 that everybody knows. I mean, it's kind of an easy way to tug on the heartstrings of the audience, because that's the music that you know that they know. But there's also stuff that they should know. In fact, so you had a couple of questions come up on Twitter, I guess. So when the Dork Tunes Twitter account sent out a notice about me being interviewed, they asked for questions. So you got some questions on there. And one of them was, what is my first game audio memory, I think was the question. Let me see if I can find it here. Yeah. What is your first ever game tune memory? So let me go back to this idea of really obscure but important to me music. And I've been thinking about this since this came up this morning, this question, and I've been thinking about this through the day, and I'm trying to look back at what is the first sort of music that I remember from a game. And it's actually a really unknown, silly little game that is called Floppy Frenzy. Okay. And so this, my father brought home an IBM PC, the very first PC is the 5150.
Yeah.
It would have been 1983 or so. And he brought home this game because he knew that us kids would be climbing on this big machine, and they were very expensive at that time. Mm. So he brought home this game called Floppy Frenzy. And Floppy Frenzy was this educational game that was designed to teach kids what not to do with a floppy disk. So your main character is a floppy disk, and you're being chased by magnets. And then there's these sort of dust piles that you have to keep trying to escape from that keep falling and getting in your way. It's kind of a basic one-screen platformer.
Yeah.
And so that is probably my earliest game music memory, is this silly little, I don't know, it must be one of the first educational video games ever made, but it was like this silly little game. You can find it on YouTube. And it had this really wacky sort of silly angel that comes down and picks you up when you die, and it plays this little tune. But, you know, that's something that when I heard that again today, when I was going looking to see, oh, I wonder if there's a copy of this game out there somewhere, it's like, wow, yeah, I totally remember that song. It was, you know, such a big game for me, and I would have been just a little kid at the time. So these obscure games, you know, they're important. I heard singing upstairs.
Plenty of nostalgia there, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
I've just checked, and we did have another question that came in on the Twitter account by Andreas H, who said, who would you have liked to have interviewed but couldn't reach in the end?
Yeah, this is a difficult question because there's so many people. I mean, we interviewed like 90 people, and you'd think that we could get, you know, pretty much everybody covered in that. But there's so many people that I would still love to interview. So people like Koji Kondo we didn't get. Oh. I know. I'm so hurt. Rob Hubbard, Martin Galway, Tommy Tallarico, Jessica Curry. And some of these people, you know, they were willing. It was just a matter of we just ran out of money and time. And so I'm kind of hoping that, oh, dare I even say this, but we might try doing this again. Not doing a whole film, but sort of continuing the project with online content rather than trying to make a movie. So, but going out and filming a few more interviews in the future, because there's just so many people that I really would have loved to have interviewed that we just didn't get, you know, enough time, enough money, whatever. Yeah, that's a difficult question. There's no one person where I say, oh, definitely that one person. There's, you know, I could probably list about 100 people that I still would love to interview. Thank you.
going to cry that Jessica's not featured in there. He's like her biggest fan. We nearly considered renaming the show the Jessica Curry Show because of the amount of time he's like, everybody's gone to the Rapture. Let's play that again. Let's play that again. He texts me the night that he'd finished playing the game and he's like, I'm crying. I'm literally crying my eyes out. I love this woman. And I'm like, but the thing is, I didn't actually even know that he'd got the game or he was even playing the game. He just literally sent me this text. I'm crying my eyes out. I'm crying my eyes out. I absolutely love this woman. And I'm like, dude, are you okay? You know, it's like, oh yeah, it's just everybody's gone to the Rapture. I'm like, oh Jesus, man, I thought I had to get in the car and come see you. Oh man. But yeah, Tommy Tallarico, absolute fun interview. I actually interviewed him this year at the iDig Music Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, really fun guy too. We spent a few days around there. Really, really, really decent guy. He doesn't like to mince his words neither.
He doesn't like to mince his words.
Yeah, so yeah, there was a lot of edits to take place, and I still need to compile the whole thing. Well, there was interviews with like Russell Brower, Neil Acree, and Tommy and Ema as well, and Craig Stewart Garfinkel, and yeah, just a big thing. And I just, things have been that busy, I haven't had a chance to do it yet. But no, you should do that. You should continue on with it. You should really go for it. There's hundreds of them out there. And, you know, maybe one day you could interview me. I could be like, yay, I did music for a game once, but no.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Maybe. I don't know. I need a recovery period after this, definitely. you know, doing that much traveling is exhausting. You know, interviewing people is exhausting because you're trying to carry the, you know, the emotion as well as the conversation. You know, you want them to feel enthusiastic and feel excited about what they're doing. And if you're asking questions that they've answered 30 times, it's hard for them to sort of sound excited to answer it. So you're trying to sort of convey all this excitement, like, oh, we're having such a great time, you know, woo. Yeah. That's draining. It's, you know, it's really exhausting. It's not so bad to do this like on a podcast, but doing this in person when you're on camera, because everything shows on camera, right? So as soon as they give you like, oh, a little eye roll, it's like, oh shit, sorry, we're gonna have to do that again, you know.
We're losing them
Yeah,
backing out.
Yeah, I mean, I can pull faces at you here and you don't know, but yeah, on camera,
this is on camera shows. I can see you right now.
Only I don't have a camera, so I don't think not on this computer anyway. Yeah, so I need a break after this. I need to get my life back together. And
no, you do right. You do right. Get back on with the software company, and you know, that'd be fantastic. So if our listeners, who you know should have all heard by now, but if they haven't heard of it and they want to check out some more information about Beep, where can they go? List of internet links.
Okay, well, your first stop is beepmovie.com. So that's our main hub. That's our website. I'm going to be redoing the website once I've sort of got this film out of my hands in preparation for our launch. But you can also go and watch some of the webisode interviews. They're all linked on that page. And follow us on Twitter at GameSoundDoc. So Doc is in documentary, GameSoundDoc. And we're on Facebook as well. I think it's just facebook.com/GameSoundDoc. I think that's probably going to give you a pretty good overview. You can check out our Kickstarter page. I mean, we're not on Kickstarter anymore, but if you're just interested in watching some of the video content, some of the teaser trailer that we put together last year, anything like that, you'll find that on Kickstarter. Just Google Beep Game Sound Movie. I think you'll find it from there.
I think that's about all we've got time for, ladies and gents. We are actually planning our first episode in January. We're going to record that, I don't know, towards maybe the first week of January. If you have a request for a song, Karen, would you like us to play anything in our next episode for you?
Oh,
I'm putting you on the spot now, aren't I?
I'm trying to think of like something that people wouldn't have heard of that. Well, you have to play Floppy Frenzy music now.
Floppy Frenzy. I think we're going to go Floppy Frenzy. Yeah, we're gonna find some Floppy Frenzy music and we're going to play that for you. That's what we're going to do. Because we like to take a lot of requests in and stuff like that. And sometimes we get inundated for the same sort of thing. Like, oh, can you play Advent Children? One Winged Angel. Oh, right, okay. Oh, can you play the Final Fantasy main theme? Oh, can you play this? It's like, oh, right, okay, some guy wants this again. And then you get that little nugget, that golden nugget, like Floppy Frenzy theme.
Well, it's only a few seconds long because these were old games, but...
Yeah,
it has that nostalgia for me.
Right then, well, thank you very much, Karen. And like I say, we give you all of the support and best of luck in the world at getting everything completed, ready for the 15th of March. And as soon as you find out the UK premiere date, please let us know, because we'll be all over that. And continue with the great work, and hopefully you'll get to put your feet up soon and watch the baby go out into the world.
It's so scary to think about it, actually, like people actually watching it. But thank you very much for having me on the podcast.
Thank you. And we will see you all next time, guys. Thanks for joining in. We may try and get like a Christmassy themed episode out, but that may be either a surprise or a letdown, so we're not quite sure yet, and I need to find out where Noob is at the moment. But until next time, see you again.